time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The future president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything on.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
Citizens of America,
the so-called Western forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol. Every instinct in me says this is death.
Bloody.
Every time I survived the war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you? You don't know?
The Western forces will reach the White House on July 4th.
Oh, my God.
Get in the car! Get in the car! Move, move, move!
You're gonna hang back.
I'm not hanging back.
One nation under God. Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go, 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 go!
God bless America.
Yes, well, last week, as you recall, we uttered those words, what kind of film critic are you? And when I pointed out that that might be referring in some small way to the movie Civil War, of course, Richard almost went apoplectic. I was simply saying, what kind of film critic are you? Because you might say you're a film critic, you might say you're an American. But what kind of an American are you? Nothing to do with Avengers Civil War. This is a whole new take on what could be happening post the next election. Who knows? You might, Richard, would you like to share with us?
Well, Alex, I have to say this is a film. Firstly, there's absolutely no question that this is a movie that's had tremendous impact in the United States, particularly, and for obvious reasons.
And but it's made by a British director, Alex Garland.
It's made by the director of Ex Machina, indeed, and someone who's a good deal of talent, but my good gracious, has this got an impact? There is no doubt at all that you have an extraordinary situation here. Take America in what could be called the near future. Now, you have a map divided into four sections. The country is polarized to the degree it has totally split. You have to, it takes some leap of the imagination, even given its polarized state at the moment politically, to appreciate how visceral, how brutal the conflict is. This is civil war where the cities are devastated. This is civil war where they, frankly, there's such a thing as prisoners. None are taken. It's got to the level way beyond the level of any possibility of human decency. And indeed, one of the aspects of this film that's so fascinating, and there's a chance, I hope, for a prequel here. The reason I think that they didn't go into it in the movie, and that's the one reason that I would take off a single point, because I would be so fascinated by it, and It is enthralling. If you look at the map of an America divided into four, the loyalist states loyal to a president, a three-term president, note. No question that there are also the Florida section, and then there's also the California-Texas section. There's a fourth section as well. How the politics, how the Civil War came to be, how matters worked out to the degree where you have people still in the country in denial that there's anything wrong, or indeed people so brutalized, they'll torture you by the side of the road and so forth at a petrol station. The facts are that this film has impact. It's not only got impact, I want to be careful of spoilers, but I will say that you see the White House in a way you'd never dreamt of seeing it. And climactically, there is a scene in Washington which is absolutely unforgettable. But the whole movie is unforgettable. The concept is superb. And indeed, the sound, the editing, the visuals, absolutely terrific, very, very powerful action scenes. Now, as I say, there's this extremist three-term president who's become something of a dictator. The country is a wreck with burnt-out cities. And one of the odd things in this film, for example, you'll come, there's the selection of homes with nicely manicured lawns, and it looks so normal. And then there's a corpse lying there, and then someone opens fire and so forth. So the whole of any form of normality has long since been abandoned, except a few people are still in denial, which makes it all the more surreal. Well,
Richard, I need to just hold you momentarily there, because obviously so significant was this, and the unfounded rumour as yet that the whole Civil War was caused by people in Texas and California refusing to eat boiled peanuts or sweet tea. We actually can welcome to the programme our American North Carolina correspondent, not normally obviously able to join us on our reviews because it's basically 3 a.m. in the morning when she is in North Carolina, but thankfully she's back in Dublin. So Jessica Burtis, you've heard some of the opening lines there for Civil War. Is this a case of, well, this is almost like a docudrama for my country post the next presidency?
The beautiful spacious skies, the amber waves of grain, to the majestic purple mountains above the fruited plain. God did shed his grace from sea to shining sea on you and on me. From the Sleepy Hollow mountain country to the swamps in Oak, to Guthrie, Oklahoma, to Hibbing, Minnesota, to Grants Pass, Oregon, to Stovepipe Wells, California, from Texas to Montana, from California to Maine. In the sunny days, the winter snow, from Arizona sand to Cherokee, North Carolina, to Tarpon Springs, Florida. America, it's time to be refreshed, recalled to memory. God did shed his grace on thee from sea to shining sea. The land is big, the best is free, sand and surf, grass and tree, from sea to shining sea.
God shed his grace on me and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea.
Well, can you hear me very well? Okay, cool, because I'm at a museum, so I'm hiding in the cafe to talk. but no, I watched this. Actually, my boyfriend wanted to watch this with me, and he is from Ireland, so he did a different perspective than me watching it, because for me, it felt very strange to be watching a movie about a civil war in the U.S. But I think it's interesting how, like how Richard was talking about, that it doesn't talk about what caused the civil war. It only talks about the aftermath and the war itself rather than the lead up. And I think that's very significant, actually.
Boiled peanuts and sweet tea, Jessica. There's no question about it.
If I may just say, the reason I personally suspected that there would be or could be a lot of trouble, and I think that's what they're afraid of. I would be riveted, though, to see what led to it and the breakdown and this map.
I think I could definitely see why that would be interesting. I think in this case, I actually preferred not knowing what led up to it, but we have little pieces of it that, like they mentioned, an Antifa massacre. And I thought that was interesting because it can be interpreted in several different ways. And it leaves a lot up to kind of the viewer. And I'm interested to see different people's perspectives based on how people feel about the presidency and about what state they live in general. I think the Carolinas were loyalists in this one to Washington, which is interesting. We had a shout out in the first few minutes. I think Florida attacked us or something, which sucked.
Always the way. That's why Kathy Mansour refused to join us, even though she's in Edinburgh. You know, that's it.
Exactly. But I think the use of word journalism, that they used different, there were lots of different modes of communication in this. And we heard radio being played. That was a big part of it. We saw the photographs that were being taken by Jesse that were used in it. And I thought that was really interesting, how many different methods of communication we were seeing. With them watching TV with the broadcasts at the beginning from the president, and kind of how technology and information dissemination was playing into it, which I think would play more of a role in a prequel. But I actually hope they don't make one. I thought that this was very interesting by itself. I want to discuss the big spoiler at the end, but I guess I shouldn't.
I think it's very difficult. I mean, I'd be interested to know your take, as I was fascinated, and Alex brought you in before I mentioned this, and that is the role of the journalists, the role of the press. You're talking about communication and the way the film centers on the experiences of four journalists. And I thought
it's Kirsten Dunst, Richard. If it's Kirsten Dunst as the journalist, obviously everything's going to work out okay.
Well, I note your view, Alex. I say no more other than the fact she plays Lee Smith at nod to Lee Miller, the famous photojournalist, and also her colleague is Joel, played by Wagner Moura, and most particularly this film centres on Kelly Spaney playing Jesse, who is new to the trade and tremendously, well, in fact, it's fascinating. She says, after a terrifying experience, that she'd never been so scared in her life and yet never so alive. And I was connecting this to the people's need to say in the Hurt Locker movie about bomb disposals bomb disposal squad in Iraq, a brilliant film where this quote, the rush of battle is a potent and often lethal addiction, for war is a drug. And that seems to appeal in a perverse way to the journalist. Is also Stephen McKinley Henderson playing Sammy, a New York Times veteran reporter. And I think the way it follows this group, I think it's absolutely fascinating, and the way they respond to the various scenes and how in the climactic sequences, shall we say, the difference, how they're affected by it and so forth.
Okay, well, those aficionados who are aware of our author features will know all about the sweet tea boiled peanuts syndrome. In case people are wondering, what's he talking about there? Simply listen to those shows. Natasha, from your own point of view, in another former colony, Civil War, nothing to do with the Avengers, is it one for you?
I think from a sociopolitical perspective, this is an absolutely interesting and fascinating sort of movie, not just the choices that they chose to make in terms of not revealing what caused it, because it makes it so much more realistic and so much more applicable and possible, but also the time in which they are releasing it, given, you know, the current events that are happening in the United States and the sort of polarization that is happening.
Why do you think Jessica's gone to Ireland, for goodness sakes? You know, get out of there, surely.
I just love how casual Jessica was like, oh yeah, Florida attacked us, it sucks. Like, that just made my day. It sounds like a Florida thing to do, apparently. sounds it. No, I'm interested.
Why do you think Disney's based there?
I just think that there are elements of this that I will find very scary, because I feel like a lot of aspects of it will feel so possible and so real. So I'm kind of in two minds about it, in that I think it'd be absolutely fascinating, but I think going away, I think my stomach might be churning a little bit with
Natasha, you cannot miss this.
Oh no, I want to watch it. I just need to probably psych myself up to watch it, because I think it's gonna rattle me a little bit.
Okay, let's bring in our newbie, our debut as far as the movie review slot is actually concerned. Level one journalist, as we mentioned, going to level two. So, Natasha, you could probably actually provide advice for Marin Hobson. Marin, is this a movie you're looking to go and see? You've heard Rich's viewpoint. I think he's going to go for a 9 out of 10, because he did say it dropped one of the points there. Jessica, obviously. What score would you give it, Jessica?
Honestly, I think I would give it probably an 8.5 out of 10. I think that the violence wasn't gratuitous. I think it was a very interesting study of communication, and I really want to hear Kathy's opinions about how it portrayed war journalism.
Yeah. It is something we will chase up as and when she wants to give another cryptic crossword clue. Anyway, Marin, is this one for you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as a journalist student myself, and also someone who's intrigued about war journalism, I mean, I haven't looked at it yet, but if I watch this film, then maybe I'll get a new lightened view of it all. And also, I used to study history and everything, so that it appeals to me through that as well. So I've got the best of both there. So it does seems great.
Although, tragically, Natasha, Marin decided to opt for another module as opposed to histories of journalism. So there you go. It's there. You know, she will not experience the Python routine. In fact, nobody will. But there we are. That's par for the course. Yeah, you can tell they've upset all sorts of things there. Never mind. Anything else you want to say about Civil War, Richard, before we have another question for you?
I'd say that it is what I'd hoped. If you can see it on IMAX, I just urge everyone to do so, because obviously that is ideal. And also, I do hope there could be prequels. And I won't say anything regarding sequels, but it's a movie that has tremendous impact. It's absolutely visceral. I'll never forget certain scenes in it. Yeah.
Well, as long as the Canadians come out okay, that's all I'm worried about. Although, Richard, I am a little bit concerned that not only have you actually gone for an opening movie with, of course, one of the lead characters called Jessica, but now, as though it was like prescient powers to knowing that Jessica Burtis is back with us for the movie review, you've gone to The Trouble with Jessica. What are you trying to do? Give the girl a complex?
Hey, they're bringing Jessica.
Why are they bringing Jessica? I wanted this evening to be special. I hear your book's doing well.
I've read it. Brilliant.
We're having to sell the house.
What?
Believe it or not, other people have problems. No real problems.
An hour ago, we were just having dinner.
This is going to change everything. And she decided to kill herself in our garden right when we're trying to sell the house. I mean, who does that? Who goes and kills himself in someone else's garden? Why couldn't she just have killed herself in her own garden?
She's never garden.
We have to deal with the situation. If the buyer finds out what has happened, he won't buy the house.
She did it here.
What if she hadn't?
What about Beth and Richard?
They're our oldest friend.
There's always something with Jessica.
Could you just ask her if she might sign my copy, if she's not too busy?
Jessica put us all in this position.
We haven't done anything!
We just did!
Did you call 999?
Everything is just great.
So it's all wrapped around your little finger.
At least I'm trying to be a good person.
That's unreasonable!
Rich people are unreasonable.
Is there something in there you don't want us to see?
Why not? It'll be all over the internet in the morning.
This is insane!
You have lost it!
You can't rule out getting caught!
I should never have brought her over.
You probably all want dessert.
Don't look.
I'm not looking.
Don't be too obvious about not looking. It's the kind of thing they pick up on.
Well, I'm sorry, Jessica. I must apologize, but here you are, so to speak.
You summoned me.
You've got to be in the liberal environs of Hampstead to appreciate the the reality of the characters portrayed in this. This is biting black comedy. This is satire, and it's very effective. And it sends up the wealthy middle class set at a Hampstead dinner party.
It's dreadfully bad manners, Richard, as Liz Brewer would say, to commit suicide in a person's garden.
Yeah, well, actually, Alex, I'd go even further. I'd say to do so in the garden.
Faux pas. Extreme.
It's not a kindly act, but to do so on a social occasion is even worse. I mean, Liz is the expert on etiquette, and this is, well, it's most unfortunate because this is a Hampstead home, a beautiful home, owned by Sarah and Tom. Sarah is played by soft-voiced, not necessarily an advantage when it comes to this role, Shirley Henderson, and Tom by Alan Tudyk. And they ask their best friends, Richard, the barrister, played by Rufus Sewell, who you've just seen in Scoop as almost unrecognisable as Prince Andrew, and Olivia Williams as Beth, his wife. There could be problems in this liaison. And this house, well, I mean, the thing is, if you bring a guest along, an uninvited guest, she wasn't asked, there's Jessica. Jessica is played by Indira Varma, who I've just recently seen, and not successfully, I have to say, as Lady Macbeth opposite Ralph.
There you go, mentioning the Scottish play again. There's just no stopping this man.
Oh, there isn't. And indeed, I have to say that she should have had far more force. But in this role, she's ideal. She appears in flashback in much of the movie because, as Alex has revealed, very inconveniently, she has, well...
Topped herself, Richard. Ended it all. I mean, you know, there are worse things in life. Marion can confirm. Going on a vacation report to Scarborough can be even more stressful.
In the garden. The trouble is that it's causing a lot of problems. And this movie, directed with flair by Matt Wynn, explores how those problems play out. The trouble is Sarah and Tom have no money. They did, but they are desperate. And people who are desperate in financial situations that are dire, well, you have to look at them surely in a sympathetic light. They're about to sell their house. Now, the sale's been agreed, and so's the price. But if a corpse turns up, well, surely you're unsympathetic, I'm sure, to the predicament that they face, because the house value would go down and the deal hasn't been finally closed.
I don't know, Richard. I mean, you know, there's added compost for the worms.
I'm sure, Alex, that's a kindly metaphor to throw into the mix. And indeed, there are plenty of worms that, so to speak metaphorically, that appear in this den of vipers. These are not moral characters. It's a movie is an indictment of greed, double standards, privilege, and capitalism at its worst. However, the problem is if a corpse is, well, hanging there, you have to remove it if you want to keep your house the same value. Now, how do Sarah and Tom persuade Richard and Beth to go along with them when they want to take the body and dump it in her flat? After all, she's caused the inconvenience. And what's more...
It is a well-known fact, Richard, on social occasions, if you're going to end it all and commit suicide at the occasion, you should arrange for your corpse to be transported home with you.
Yes, that's very true, Alex, and that's the problem. But the difficulty is, for example, a barrister being involved in this. As I mentioned, Richard was a barrister. And then the debate, the problems over this, wife, Beth, is far from enamoured with him anyway, and this exacerbates it, to put it mildly. And when the buyer decides to turn up with his wife to view the house, after he's played by, the character's name is Groth, played by Sylvester Groth, a sort of pun on the name, I suppose, he's very suspicious something's going a bit wrong. Should he close the deal or shouldn't he? The problem is how you keep best friends when you really do want a favour, but before that they've given or you've done them a favour, and how do you blackmail them if they're not receptive? Well, It's all good fun looking at the liberal hypocrites, their hypocrisy over green issues. There's a lot of fun here. It isn't so much wit in the dialogue as such. It's the situation comedies, whereas you could have a Phaedo farce with like a flea in her ear, that sort of thing with corpses being ferried around. It does sound a bit like that. Now, nonetheless, as a comedy, it's well written. It's amusing. There are silly policemen who appear, and some of it, not all of it, works. Some of it is a bit silly, but nonetheless, it's great fun. And also, who is having an affair with who? What is Jessica's real past? Who is Mr. X, or who, plural, might Mr. X have been? And when all these fascinating facts get revealed, you've had an hour and a half of extremely entertaining satire. This is, it's dark enough, and lots of flashbacks where Indira Varma has plenty of opportunity to appear, as I say. As we all know, she has an unfortunate experience earlier. But no doubt at all, firstly, you don't want a guest who's getting a bit drunk and far too flirty, which she was, but you don't expect that. And then it throws the friendships and the marriages, and look at the family, into crisis. The only problem in the movie, really, is Shirley Henderson as Sarah. If you're soft-voiced, you can be very menacing. No doubt about that. But I like hearing what people have to say. And I had a lot of trouble with her whispering.
Oh, dear. Surely you can't be serious. Jessica Burtis. Hopefully somewhere in this museum. Which museum are you actually in Dublin, Jessica?
Well, I've actually left Ireland yesterday, and I'm in Paris right now, so I'm in the Musée d'Orsay.
So, oh, lucky you. Wonderful.
I've never been before, so yeah. I'm running around the cafe, but I was not going to miss this. I had to join.
This is very true. So clearly, my backdrop of an Irish routine should have been replaced with a French routine. Never mind, Musée d'Orsay is indeed their gain, is Ireland's loss. So, trouble with Jessica, is it one for yourself, or is it a case of I'm outraged?
No, I mean, obviously, I'm already pro this movie just by the character choice names. They have excellent taste. But I think it sounds really fun. I really like satire and black comedy. And I recently, it kind of reminds me with the apparently multitude of corpses in this movie about, I recently watched, was it Liza Frankenstein? That came out pretty recently. I watched that one. And even though I love Catherine Newton, the movie was a bit of a disappointment for me, but that one was also a black comedy. So I'm looking for a new one. So I think this one sounds very promising.
Excellent. Natasha, dark comedy, one for you?
Oh, you know I love a juicy dark comedy, Alex. Rich is picking the good ones tonight. He's got two juicy ones for two different reasons. I'll be honest, though, at the start of the wind-up, the introduction to all of this was not where I thought we were ever going to go on this show in terms of a conversation topic, talking about the faux pas of committing suicide for social etiquette. But hey, you keep bringing the show to new heights, guys. this film. I would like to see this film. I have one question for you, Richard, though. You said that this is full of some rather unsavory people and characters. Do you feel like the ending is satisfying? Because if it's one of those kind of movies, I need to know it's going to be satisfying.
I didn't feel it was unsatisfying. I think it was a curious ending. But you did wonder after the film ended, and I was thinking about this, how else it could have ended, and it probably couldn't have satisfactorily ended in another way. Equally, most of the fun isn't in the ending. It's watching the various figures discomforted throughout.
Okay.
Marin, yesterday,
it's going to be satisfying enough of a journey.
Fair enough. Marin, yesterday you coped with Daleks versus Stormtroopers. You coped with a variety of other routines, including the amazingly wonderful world of a cat who has cerebral palsy. Yes, Natasha, that emotionally overwhelming it was on location in Scarborough. But Marion, what about the trouble with Jessica? One for yourself?
Yeah, this seems very up my street. I really like satire, as Jessica said. But you immediately intrigued me with the suicide in the garden, which is a weird thing.
Does it happen a lot in Huddersfield at all, Marion? That sort of situation?
I can't say it does, but Who knows? But I also like the thing of you were saying about the affairs. I like how we can guess along with it because that kind of involves you, and I like that.
Is it another 9 out of 10, Richard?
Oh, 8 out of 10, but it's got a few flaws, as I say, a couple of comic cops who are a bit silly and so forth. But no, I would recommend it for those who like the sort of thing, yes.
Okay. Well, the moment has arrived, the moment that we've been waiting for some considerable period of time, certainly across the globe, which is a movie you probably weren't going to go for, Richard, because you decided to actually go for Civil War instead of the Titanic clash, the real meatiness of this whole system, which I know Natasha Wanton is all set and ready to do, Godzilla X Kong, New Empire.
For centuries, there was harmony. The Titans were the guardians of nature, and the great apes became the protectors of humanity. Discovered a signal. She can feel it. Kong, Godzilla, they can feel it too. Something is coming. Something even they're afraid of.
You feel like going for a ride?
Thought you'd never ask.
Just try not to swallow your tongue.
What?
Is that a mini Kong?
Oh my God.
That's not just a signal. That's a call for war. What is that?
Can't stop this on his own.
He won't be alone.
The last time those two met up was almost the end of Kong.
They don't have to like each other. They just have to work together.
Now I have seen everything.
We've made some minor augmentations.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Let's get into it, boys and girls and everyone who identifies as anything else they like. So this is the fifth film in the multiverse franchise. It's a sequel in a way to Godzilla vs. Kong, which was released back in 2021. It helps if you know a little bit about what's been happening so far in the recent movies.
You need to know what Monarch is, basically, as opposed to some reference to King Charles III.
It would generally help you, but I mean, as I know, as you know, as Robin Pierce knows, you don't go to these movies for the plot, right? So if you don't happen to have watched any of the other movies, it's not going to be massively putting you on a back foot. You can still enjoy it, right? But anyway, I shall go into the plot for those of you that are vaguely interested. So this is sort of like your 38th film in the Godzilla franchise since it started.
38, Richard. 38.
38. Yep, yeah, they've had 38 Godzilla movies and 13 King Kong movies. So it's got a lot of baggage to sort of follow. Mm. And this one's done moderately okay in the box office. It's grossed sort of 444 million kind of worldwide, which isn't too bad. It's despite the fact that it's had quite mixed reviews from critics.
52% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know. Well, the issue was the Japanese movie, which is excellent, by the way, guys, check out Godzilla Minus One. That came out at the end of last year. Now, that is a Japanese-made movie, and a lot of people are comparing it. This is one you would go to for the plot because it's set just after the Second World War, obviously with the atomic bombings, taking it back to the Godzilla to his roots. But there's a lot more of an unpacking of relationships. And I think this one would be much more on Richard's sort of bag because it focuses much more on relationships and sort of people and the social building.
I think it's only a matter of time before Richard realizes that his heart should be set on seeing the Godzilla Kong multiverse in full.
But that movie's not related to this one. So this one is set 3 years after the events of the Mechagodzilla. Everyone remembers Mechagodzilla. And sort of Kong has sort of established a new territory in Hollow Earth. And he's keeping to his space. And Godzilla's sort of allowed to roam free on the surface. And
it's like Trump and Biden. Biden and Trump. Literally, a metaphor.
They're just existing in different spheres and they're leaving each other alone in their different territories. And hey, if Godzilla happens to occasionally take a giant, nap in the Colosseum in Rome and break a couple of monuments, not a lot the Roman...
As long as he stays out of the museums in Paris, that's the important thing.
Well, you would hope so. You would hope so, though he doesn't quite leave France alone, but you'll find that out in the plot. So Monarch sort of set up this observation outpost in Hollow Earth, and they're starting to pick up an unidentified signal. And on the surface, you have Jaya, and she's the last known survivor of the Iwi tribe from Skull Island. You sort of see some of her interactions. If you've been following the Monarch plot line, you'll know a little bit about who she is. And she's trying to settle into her new life with her adopted mother, Dr. Irene Andrews. And she's sort of worrying because Jaya's starting to have these nightmares and she's starting to sort of black out and scribble all sorts of markings. And these markings, strangely enough, happen to be matching these signals that are coming out of this Hollow Earth outpost. You can see where this is going here. But do continue to carry on. So we are sensing a signal. We're sensing it in Hollow Earth. And suddenly they lose all of their signals and their contact with the Hollow Earth outpost. Now, what's happened? Where are the signals coming from? And why are they suddenly not able to contact their team? Well, they get the opportunity to go down there and have a look because poor old Kong's got a toothache. So out he pops from the crust of the earth. And...
It's probably the same problem with Benjamin Netanyahu, Natasha. That's what I'm thinking.
Yes, but he didn't have a very charismatic Australian dentist to sort out all of his tooth problems. I mean, let's be honest, he's the best. The dentist was the best character in the whole show, let's be honest. By a long shot, it was great acting. But anyway, so out Kong pops, gets his new tooth put in. He's ready to go down, and down go a little crew to try and figure out what's happening and where the signals are coming from.
They literally want the tooth, the whole tooth, and nothing but the tooth.
Exactly. And of course, being a large monster movie, it's going to happen very quickly because they've got to shove as much plot out the way so they can get to the CGI. So we get down there and we look at the screen take and we see some very ominous sort of images popping up on their security cameras of this strange big eye. And it looks like an ape eye. So they're wondering, did Kong attack the outpost? No, he was up here getting his tooth sorted with the dentist. So who's been attacking this outpost? And I won't give spoilers, but basically we find out that Kong might not be the only ape down there. And suddenly he's the friendliest if there is more than one. What basically happens is it is sort of a civil war of its own kind. We're going with civil war themes today. That sort of brings down about five giant monsters in this giant Titanic showdown. And it is brilliant in its CGI, in its sort of staging. The special effects are great. The plot is thin as tissue paper. I wouldn't recommend it.
It is a deep-rooted metaphor for today's political situation in the world.
Oh, it is. It is a thin, thin plot. But do you know what? Do the actors have a lot of fun? Yes, they look like they've had a lot of fun. Can you tell who's going to live and who's going to die in the first 5 minutes? Yes, you can. But hey, it's a fun movie. What more do you want from a MonsterVerse movie? It was very visually beautiful to look at. I liked, you know, the settings that they created on Hollow Earth. I liked the different creatures, and sort of they tried to bring in a little bit of the biology and the zoology, and they tried to bring up a little bit of the world building, which never hurts in these kind of movies. You know, it's slapdash. It usually is slapdash in these kind of movies, but it does what it says on the tin. You have a giant monkey. You have Godzilla. They're going at it. The CGI is great. It's a fun movie. I'm giving it a solid 7.
Jessica Burtis, Kong vs. Godzilla, A New Empire. Your thoughts?
Well, I've also found a quieter space in the museum, so I'm sorry I didn't find it sooner. But you all got some ambiance from the noisy cafe before. It's nice to know that I don't need to know the former plots of the others, because I can't keep up with all of the King Kong and Godzilla movies. So I'm glad to hear that. My dad watches them all. I think, you know, if I'm looking for plot, I will go see Civil War, but sometimes you need a movie that just is about action and it's just fun. I am glad the plot is tissue thin. I expect nothing less from King Kong and Godzilla. I'm very impartial to Godzilla movies because Godzilla by Blue Oyster Cult was one of my favorite songs growing up. So I feel like every time I hear Godzilla, I'm like, I need to go see this for some reason. I will be watching it when it's maybe available on streaming or on DVD or something, because I don't think I can handle these kind of action movies in the theater.
That's fair. That's fair. I would say it's not for everybody. I would say to the listener, if they do get a chance and it's something they feel comfortable with, it is really worth seeing it on the big screen because of the special effects and because of all of the sound and everything. But if that's not something that is for you, complete respect and understand that.
I will go see this at some point, whether it's at home or somewhere, because I mean, I don't know. These movies are just fun. I hope they never stop making monster movies. Mm. I think that there is a reason why. Something about just like giant creatures wrecking tiny cities, possibly wrecking France, ? Just appeals to something in humans. I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's the same instinct that makes us want to wreck sandcastles or something. But I feel like I need to go see this.
Or H.G. Wells wanting to wreck Surrey with War of the Worlds, but still, there it goes. Maren, is Godzilla Kong one which you think, yes, this is going to be the perfect movie to celebrate the end of surviving one whole year as a journalism undergraduate at the University of Lincoln?
Well, it might be. I mean, I agree. I think it's just kind of fun, you know, to watch. And when you don't know what to watch, it could be just that thing to watch with your friends or family. But I always get confused because with the films of them, I don't know who's the good or bad guy, because I'm always scared I'm going to start rooting for the monster. Who cares about the humans? I'm all monster. Destroy cities.
I think in this one, don't worry, you're safe. You're hard. You can root to your heart's content. Don't worry. This one's got you covered.
And Richard, I can see that you're deeply, deeply tempted to actually start checking this whole process out. Now, obviously, you don't have to worry about it being animation, but clearly in this particular instance, you have got dental issues. You've got, obviously, Hollow Earth scenarios. You've got the Empire. I mean, surely it has to slot into your routine. Or is it a case of, no, I'm waiting for something much more highbrow, Wolverine versus Deadpool, for instance?
Yes, Wolverine versus Deadpool would be absolutely fascinating, Alex. But I certainly, I mean, Natasha's exuberant review has certainly tempted me.
There you go.
I would say if you are going to get into it, though, Richard, I would start with Godzilla Minus One, even if it's in Japanese, because it does have more of that character development as opposed to this one, which is just monster sumo wrestling.
Now, mind you, of course, I probably wouldn't be able to cope with more than one.
Well, Minus One, you can actually sort of take one and another one to go on top of that, which gives you two, technically, in the mathematical world. Jessica, any highlights from your museum trip that you've been having?
Well, I got to see the Van Gogh's, his self-portrait, which I've never seen a Van Gogh in person before. So that was very exciting to get to see. where we have we have a lot of days that are pretty packed, but honestly, I'm really missing Ireland already. Even though it was rainy and freezing, and
just like Scarborough, it's just cold.
Exactly, you know, but I miss it. The British Isles are so, I don't know, the landscape is just very beautiful, and it's just a little bit different from Paris and the busyness of a city. So, but yeah, I'll be going to England this weekend or next weekend. So I'll be closer. Yes,
exactly.
I'm excited.
It's getting closer each day, a bit like the American election. Anyway, Natasha Wanton. To Jessica Burtis, of course, welcome back to Marion Hobson. People wondering, Anna Koshkinol is on a train. Clearly the connection hasn't enabled her to actually connect from that point of view. Sarah Huntley's in rehearsal. Well, we know Kathy Manso is planning Florida's attack on North Carolina in Jessica's absence.
Is there, just as long as they don't take the boiled peanuts, we're okay. I feel like we can make a truce.
Yeah, I would hope so. And to Richard Fitzwilliams, huge thanks as ever. That's it then. So those immortal words we wrap up with. Keep watching the movies. I think it was the Kaiser Chiefs who once said, "What did you learn at school?" To which the response was, "I learned nothing." Pink Floyd, of course, we don't need no education. You can go back to the post-Napoleonic times where people are saying education is just a political football. It's all over the place. And certainly a recent survey which points out that 37% of UK adults believe that the current educational system leaves young people worse prepared than somebody who actually left at the turn of the millennium. Likewise, 88% are believing that education should focus more on teaching young people skills that will be useful for the workplace. again, no surprises there, really. But maybe we're just beginning to address these issues. And to actually talk us through this, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of the Edge Foundation, Alice Barnard. How are you, Alice?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. First of all, Alice, can you just explain what the Edge Foundation actually is?
Yes, of course. So we are an independent organisation interested in education from 4 through to 24. We have a research and policy team that are interested in expanding our thoughts around education and looking at a much broader and more balanced curriculum and assessment reform.
And this is something which is obviously critical, because the fairly damning conclusion, which sadly is not surprising, is that the system in Britain is, if not exactly completely broken, it's certainly not fit for purpose.
Yes. I mean, I think that this piece of polling, which took into account the views of 2,000 adults in England, which crosses socioeconomic groups and age groups, was really quite conclusive, that less than a quarter of adults think that the current education system in England prepares people for the workplace. And as you said, you know, that's quite a shocking statistic, considering, you know, we've looked at a 20-year period. Yeah. So I think there's a real opportunity here to rethink what this could look, what the landscape could look like going forward, and to really start to think about how we prepare young people for the world of work.
Indeed, over three quarters saying that they would support a proposal to reform the education system in line with the advanced British standard proposal. So next question clearly is, what is the advanced British standard proposal?
Well, this is the interesting bit. So what we know is what the government have announced so far. So Rishi Sunak has said the advanced British standard is the direction of travel for the Conservative Party, and this would be a mix of a minimum of 5 minors. So majors would be bigger qualifications, minors would be smaller. You'd be able to blend academic and vocational qualifications alongside each other, and you would have more teaching hours, so more contact time between teachers and pupils, and you would study some form of English and maths to 18. So we don't think that would be an A level. We think that would be more functional skills. So understanding, perhaps from a maths perspective, you know, budgeting, bank accounts, mortgages, interest rates, etc., rather than thinking about it as a strict qualification like an A level maths. So we think that's what it looks like. We think that it would be a much broader and more balanced approach to that 16 to 18 phase of education.
Mm-hmm. And clearly dealing with something which we've regularly been talking about on these particular programmes, which is the importance of life skills and genuine life skills. Yeah. And much as it's fascinating to actually know how to differentiate from first principles and appreciate the notion of integration, calculus and so on, for certain folk, that's fantastic. But for a majority of folk, probably actually knowing how interest rates operate would be probably more useful. But there you go. I think we actually have somebody else who is probably... again, a case study in many ways of this, Riley Sweeney with us. Riley, would you like to just talk us through your own particular narrative in this area?
Yes, so I went to a technical school called UTC South Durham, where I explored the technical and vocational options, which I found were a lot more around developing your core skills, developing everything that you need to be successful in the world of work. And it focused a lot more on apprenticeships and making sure that I was ready. I took part in 13 work experience programs. And I think that got me ready and prepared to now being in my apprenticeship, compared to looking back at some of my friends who were in mainstream, who left school not knowing what a CV was. So I think there's a massive push at the moment, and the poll shows that young people want to see more to explore technical and vocational options. They want to focus on preparing young people for technical routes rather than just university. So I've seen the firsthand effect of that technical education, which was just monumental compared to what my friends had experienced in mainstream schools.
Yeah, and again, point you make there about work placement, that it tends to be a bit of a variable experience. I mean, there are services like Siren Radio, Southside Broadcasting and so on, that effectively, whether it's Teesside or Lincoln and so on, we will kind of take some students on board, they will benefit, they'll stick with us, they'll build up their CV, etc. But it is a bit of a hit and miss situation. Alice, presumably we're looking at a bit more consistency here. I mean, Riley's very eloquently explained her own experience from that point of view. is it a case of it's a variety and an acknowledgement, perhaps finally, that one size doesn't fit all, that some people will go to university, some people actually prefer a different route for their life path?
I think actually this is the first exciting shift in policy we've seen for a very long time. Up until now, it's been a very, very narrow, tight curriculum, unless, like Riley, you experienced a UTC style of education. We have been preparing young people for cliff edge exams. It's all about cramming and then doing your exam at the end of the 2-year period. This is the first real sign of a policy shift to something that is far more dynamic, that is all about preparing young people for the world of work, but also allowing them to be in the driving seat of what their study looks like. So they're really able to tailor make their own education and the opportunity to keep their options open, because not everybody knows what they want to do at 16. So the opportunity to be able to study a much broader range of subjects and to be able to blend the academic with the vocational. There is no need to create a divide between academic for one and vocational for another. Most people thrive with choice, whether you're highly academic or whether you really enjoy your BTEC qualifications at the moment. It doesn't matter. This is an opportunity to be able to do both of those together and to really enjoy your school experience, because you can find those things that you're really good at and then you can hone those skills. You can engage with employers. I mean, Riley is a great example of how this could work universally. Not only is she eloquent, but she also is working and learning and earning. I mean, what isn't to like about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be probably remiss of us when we're talking about potential future of education not to mention those two letters A and I, artificial intelligence, which obviously can impact in terms of technical aspects, etc. Do you feel that that could actually be of an assistance in this particular area, in this particular redevelopment of how we look at maths and English up to 18 and this blending of academic and vocational subjects?
Well, I think AI is the future of the world. So we need to understand how that can be adopted and used effectively. And also we can understand how it might be detrimental to both young people and the wider population. So I think there's huge amounts of opportunity with technology, but we just need to be careful how we deploy it and make sure all the correct protections are in place.
Riley, if you were to actually have the opportunity to actually speak to Rishi Sunak today, and who knows, he might be listening to this, what would you actually want him to actually do? Would you actually endorse what Alice has been saying, saying, look, for goodness sakes, we need some change in the education system, certainly for the 16 to 18 bracket?
Yes, absolutely. I would push for that balance. And that obviously education isn't that one size fit all, and we know that. So how do we engage all young people? How do we target all young people so that everyone can succeed? And how do we prepare young people to be successful in today's competitive job market?
One of the reasons I think Riley should be standing as an MP in the near future, but there we are. That's another thing. Alice, how can people actually find out more about the Edge Foundation and some of the things we've been discussing so far?
If you are interested in our work, then please go to our website, edge.co.uk.
Alice Barnard, Chief Executive Officer of the Edge Foundation, and indeed the fabulous Riley Sweeney. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.